Thank you. And the title there is The Manuscript 23N10 rather than The Manuscript. The manuscript came into public view for the first time on the 21st of April 1851. Subscribers had clubbed together and found £500 to buy 134 manuscripts from Sir William Beetham for the Academy. Benjamin Guinness had chipped in the final 20 quid, and once that was in, the subscribers were invited. I hope you can see enough. I can hardly read anything either on the laptop or on the screen behind me. Were invited to the launch at the Academy. Now, 21st of April, it was not in this room. It would have been in the old Academy House at the end of Grafton Street, looking down Nassau Street at that time. Charles Graves made a long speech which was fully reported in the press. This is merely a few inches of many, many, many column inches devoted to the occasion and the speeches. I'm afraid I can't tell you what the newspaper is. The search techniques failed to find it, and the person who kept the cutting in the Academy didn't write down either the newspaper or the date. The manuscript, this is 23A9, where the cuttings are kept. And top of the bill, as Charles Graves started to introduce things, the first manuscript to which I would beg leave to direct attention is a volume which bears on the back the date 1100, though its real date is much more recent, having been written in the year 1575. There's a giveaway for us. It is a manuscript of great value, both on account of the importance of its contents and the accuracy with which it was written. An interesting observation for someone who'd seen the manuscript a week or two before. The cover must have included some kind of description with the date 1100 on. What that cover was, I don't know. I'm not sure that it was a binding. I think it may have been that it was in a wrap, but it was thrown away when the binder got to it in or soon after 1851. Now, going back a little bit, the manuscript was first discovered by the world of learning on the 12th of March, 1847. You can raise a toast in commemoration on Monday. When William Beetham offered his manuscripts to the Academy in 1846, his initial asking price was £1,500, which he claimed to be his first cost, you know, what he had paid in building the collection. He dropped it very, very quickly to £1,000, and then he dropped it again to £500 as the subscription was getting nowhere near. But at the stage of the offer, the Academy set up a subcommittee and sent them round to his house to take a look at the manuscripts and come up with values. Here, I'm not sure whether any of us can read it. The subcommittee is the Reverend Dr. Todd, George Petrie, H.J. Monk Mason, Lytton. Yeah, I can't make out what's in front of me there. That's from their first meeting. At their later meetings, most of these people didn't turn up, and the valuations were done by a small group: Charles Graves, John O'Donovan, and Eugene O'Curry. This is the page on which we find the manuscript we're interested in. You can see the layout of the page. It actually has reference to the room and shelf at intervals, so if we could get into Beetham's house in Mount Street, we could see where the books used to be. There's a running number in Arabic with a ring round it. The Roman numerals to the left are the numbers that actually appear on Beetham's manuscripts, though not all of them carry numbers. And the numbers across the page, you see N10, that is what we're looking for. These date from something like 1866, when the old manuscript case, a wide case with six shelves, which was already long since full, was replaced by putting all the manuscripts into one case, which came to be number 23, as they spread into 24 and then other cases. So 145 on the list is what we're interested in. I've blown it up there, small quarto, ancient tracts, prose and verse, and I've transcribed it, small quarto, ancient tracts, prose and verse, monastic rules, etc., and this Irish phrase. Excuse me, I'm running on two piles of paper. I'm not sure whose hand it is who couldn't transcribe the Irish phrase very well. Fua na Bamaria is what we read there. £100 as the valuation at the right-hand side. And can you see faintly in pencil above £100 the words, get this? I think this is, that's get this rather than get this. I don't know the date of the modern colloquialism that draws attention to something, but I think it's make sure this reaches the Academy Library. John O'Donovan might have corrected the reading of the title because he'd certainly come across the title already. And while the manuscript was in Beetham's possession, Beetham had been studying it carefully. And here we have Beetham in his strange work, Etruria Celtica. I have in my own library manuscripts unintelligible to common Irish scholars. And then a change of direction. And as the Irish are in general very happy in sobriquet, I have seen a manuscript bearing the singular title of Fua na Womari. Womari. We can overlook the misprint in the Clo Goilach, F-S-A-T-H. That's just the printer. The hatred of the pirates or pretended scholars. Fua hatred, yes, but I suspect this is rather Fua one in O'Donnell's dictionary, form, shape, or possibly phantom, spectre. And I would probably have said no womorach, wavorach, does it denote? The Fomorians. Pirates is given in O'Donnell, but I've not seen a quotation, and I don't know whether the word is used to mean pirates. One suspects that Beetham had not so much been consulting a dictionary, but someone below stairs in his own house, which was about as close as he ever got to knowledge of Irish. The gloss pretended scholars is a piece of his own absurd vanity. As John O'Donovan knew all too well, now you've got at the left the first of four pages of a letter of John O'Donovan's to John Windle in Cork, May 1843. I've enlarged the bit that we're interested in, but I've transcribed a longer passage. The manuscript called Fuena Womarache he has is now in the possession of Sir William Beetham, as he informs us in his Etruria Celtica, which he wishes his readers to understand that no one now living can read but himself. And he then characteristically goes on to give us an account of some of the reasons he thinks Beetham should shut up. O'Donovan's letters are full of interesting things. They are long, and there's an awful lot of them. And we're in four figures counting O'Donovan's letters. I long for an annotated edition, but it would be a very demanding task. You'd need to know an awful lot about the things O'Donovan knew about to be able to explain. Now, we begin to get a little more serious. The real question is, how did Beetham get his hands on this manuscript, or indeed on any other of his manuscripts? He was not a serious collector. He has no track record in collecting. You know, I can track him in the 1820s rushing round trying to buy an Irish manuscript because he wanted to make a present of one to the Duke of Sussex. But he had no intention of forming a collection. He did trade in medieval manuscripts. He bought and sold medieval books, generally speaking, in Latin, and he'd made quite a nice line. He traded the Book of Dimmer, selling it to Trinity College, and he traded also the Book of Ivania, which was in Beetham's possession in 1819, 1820, and he sold it for we know not what to the Duke of Buckingham in the 1820s. I think his collecting was sparked by the collecting of George Smith, the bookseller in now where in College Green, as he then was before they moved to Grafton Street, who was buying up manuscripts in County Limerick and County Clare for, I suspect, very little money. You could go and consult Smith's manuscripts in the shop Hodges and Smith, and Beetham would have known that there was a collection growing there, and he may have known that the expectation is that it would be sold. Hodges and Smith offered their manuscripts to the Academy in 1843 for £1,312 and some shillings and pence. The price was in guineas. 1846, Beetham asks for £1,500, and I think he is trying to cash in on the same sort of thing. So he's in this as an investment. He's not in it because he's interested, and he has no detectable contacts with the world of Irish speakers or Irish scribes beyond his cook, his housemaid, and his groom. I've constructed a rambling argument over 70 or 80 pages in this book launched last month, which you can read, that over a period of 4, 5, 6 years, he bought, mostly from Paul and Padre O'Longoyen at Carrignavar near Cork. And that is how he got 23N10. By 1841, we know that Paul O'Longoyen was going around the countryside in County Cork buying up manuscripts himself, with a view, I suspect, to trading on at a very significant markup to Beetham, who was not a particularly rich man, but by comparison with Paul and Padre O'Longoyen, had ample money and was quite easily duped. Now, I want to go back to December 1840, and Windle in Cork writes to Beetham in Dublin. Now, the image you've got there is in Windle's hand, but it's from Windle's papers, it's not from Beetham's papers. So it appears to be a draft that he retained or a copy that he kept before posting the letter. I'd hoped I might find the out letter in the 25 guard books of Beetham's correspondence in the National Library, which are not a trackless wilderness, but they're by no means a complete collection. There's 3,500 letters to Beetham there. So Windle says, "You may remember a man of the name of Long, who last year sold some Irish manuscripts in Dublin, I believe principally to you. He's lately pretended to have lost a half vellum, half paper Irish manuscript lent to him by Mr. Dennis O'Flynn of this city." This is Dennis, the son of Donach O'Flynn, the better known Irishian who died in 1830. And as his story is a silly one, we believe he either has sold it or intends to do so. Should this fellow offer you any more manuscripts for sale, you would do a service by keeping an eye out for this manuscript. Its title was, and Microsoft has wrecked my Clogwelech, Iadriveg dos Suher Nashan, and it contained the Tegas Grioga and an account of Owen Vacha. The Tegas Grioga, I take it, we're talking about Tegas Gacormac starting on the first page. Doesn't have the title, but it does have a scribal heading that refers to this Tegask. The account of Owen Macha is now page 68, embedded in the Tochvac Evera. The name is visible in that context. I don't think you have to have done a lot of close reading to pick it out, but this is conversation that Windle is reporting. It is part of current knowledge that Michal Aug Olongoin had copied several items, one of them unique from this manuscript in 1808, into his manuscript 23E16, which also passed through Beetham's hands, and he reused some of his selection in 1816. So Olongoin hands in 1808, but that isn't really the answer. What prompted Windle to write to Beetham about this manuscript was Denis O'Flynn and the silly story. This is information coming in to Windle from Hackett in Middleton, east of Cork. I heard you deplore Mr. O'Flynn's loss of an Irish manuscript. Perhaps what follows may bear upon the subject. And we get the interesting tale. One of my initiated neighbours, as you speak Irish, was telling me the other day about the Irishians. The best he said of his acquaintance was Paul Long, son of Michael Long of Carrick Navarre. He had a great collection of manuscripts, which he sold some time ago for £100 or £150 in Dublin. My informant further states that he is not certain to whom the sale was made, but thinks it was to some academy. Now, should the said academy prove to be the RIA, Mr. O'Flynn can probably see if his book were in the said collection. My memory is so bad that I do not remember the name of the person you mentioned as having lost the book on the coal quay. But if it were not Paul Long, then I have to beg his pardon for having introduced his name in such a questionable shape. Hackett was clearly embarrassed by this, because he didn't post the letter until a fortnight later, when he says, "In haste to send your friend Flynn the desired information, I send you the letter which I had kept back for fear of injuring Mr. Paul Long's character." And both letters are under one postmark, the 17th of December, 1840. So Windle has known about Flynn's loss for some time. We don't know how this came into Windle's possession, but here is another letter. It's in Windle's hand, but this is a copy of a letter from Paul O'Longoin to Denis Flynn, dated 8th of March, I think, 1841. There's a transcription there. I'm aware you're in possession of the fate of that book. I think that means no more than that you know the story. You're not actually in possession. But I am under the impression you are ignorant of its real history, and particularly how your father, Michael Flynn, came by it. I will give you some information respecting it and to the public at large. Timothy Lomasney, Timothy is an educated guess, of Peafield lent it to Dr. Murphy, about the Bishop of Cork, about 22 years ago, so that takes us back to 1819. He was not able to read it, so he showed it to your father, who borrowed it from the bishop. After the lapse of 2 or 3 years, Lomasney and his son called for their book to Dr. Murphy. Dr. M searched his house for it and could not find it. The house was full of books. Never thinking to whom he lent the book, Lomasney had to go without it, therefore it remained in your father's possession and yours. So it's not really your book. I will report the whole transaction to John L., I think that's Sean O'Lomasna, to Dr. Murphy, etc. You had the assurance of searching my mother's dwelling, high and low, up and down, box, cupboard, drawer, and every corner in the house. This is Michal Aug's house. He died in 1837. His widow is still in the house, and it's full of thousands and thousands of pages of paper written in his own hand or the hand of his father. Searching for said miserable, dirty, old rag. So that's a description of 23N10 in 1841. I'm ashamed of your conduct. I would meet face to face only for fear of abusing you, which you richly deserved. I'm also very much obliged to your coadjutor, Windle, but depend on it, I am not done with you. I will see whether you can come into any house without warrant or authority with impunity. You could do no more than to tell everyone that I cheated you out of it. And you also made use of expressions on yesterday, insinuating you would injure my family. I defy... This is friendly stuff, isn't it? and it's written in English between two people who surely dealt with themselves, with one another, entirely in Irish. So there's a threat for a punch-up on next Sunday. However, if you drop it now, so will I. There we have the history of the manuscript. It belonged to Timothy Lummesney of Peafield. And here, page 27 of the manuscript, Taig o Lummesna Molya o Gaha, Assembly Othan Dísher Sawala Och Gé Deig. So in 1800, it was in the hands of Taig o Lummesna at Ballyogahy. I don't know when he died. I presume he is by this date no longer living, and that Seán Ó Lummesna, the son, is. Seán Ó Lummesna himself, I shouldn't show you that. In the introduction to the facsimile, Best lists the scribblings by owners in date order, starting with 1702, 1706, 1800, 1715. It's as though Best struggled to make sense of Ocht Gé Déag. But there, if you can see any of it, is some verses signed by Seán Ó Lummesna, and that comes from a manuscript context where William Hackett is the recipient, and it's come to him from David Barry in 1841. So I think Hackett could, if we were able to interrogate him, could have pursued the story in rather more detail if he'd chosen to. But he didn't. There we have some images to prove what I referred to earlier. On the left you have 23N10 and the lowest paragraph, Rov Tuma Volia, the early poem, and which is found in only a couple of manuscripts. And on the right-hand side you have Micheál Óg's transcription. He transcribed four poems that hang together in other contexts, including Stow B42, which Chantal referred to. And I hesitate to think that Micheál O'Clery copying things into B42 was copying from 23N10. I suspect if he'd got 23N10 in front of him, O'Clery would have copied a lot more than those four things. And those four things were copied by Richard Tibber in Dublin in 1716. He couldn't have been using B42 because that was still in the possession of Rory O'Flaherty in Galway. I don't know what Tibber is copying from, but Micheál Óg copies that group and two or three other things, including Rob Tuma Volia, which is very rare. And in 23N10, this list of 133 moral sayings is, I think, not known elsewhere, but Micheál Óg copied that. And he reused some of the stuff in a manuscript he was doing for a patron in 1816, but he's at that stage, I think he's going from his own 1808 transcript. My guess is if Taig Ó Lummesna owned the manuscript in 1800, and if Taig Ó Lummesna lent it to Bishop Murphy in 1819, that in 1808 Micheál Óg has borrowed it from Taig Ó Lummesna. So we're in the context of these Cork scribes. Now, I didn't have the skill to do the map that I might have liked to cut and paste out of the townlands in Ireland. Balliol Ó Gaithí is the name of three townlands in Gortreau Parish in County Cork. The townland mentioned in the colophon, in the ownership mark there. The adjacent townland is Peafield, which is what was mentioned in connection with Timothy Lummisney in the letter. P. Field, I'm not sure how common this is, but it's the name of two townlands. I presume it's one townland that's split by the parish boundary. And so half of it is in Gautreau Parish and half of it is in Temple Bowden Parish. The next parish north is Rathcormick. And in Rathcormick lived in the 18th century Bishop Sean O'Brien at Ballinterry between 1740 and 1767. Portigo Rian, in an article in the Cork Hist some time back now, observed that at the back of 23N10, we have here a martyrology, and there's two separate pages there. The sloping hand that I can't point to, my arm isn't long enough, but I hope you can pick out the sloping hand, is that of Sean Omarachu Narahinach, well-known scribe in Carrick Navarre, about 25 kilometres west of Ballinterry or Ballyogaha. Sean Omarachu has copied this martyrology into a manuscript of his making, 1739-1747. That's now one of the manuscripts sold to Bishop Murphy, Maynooth Murphy 84. So in 1739, we have the manuscript at Carrick Navarre, and O'Rean conjectured that the shortest route from Carrick Navarre to Ballyogahy at this date was via Bishop O'Brien, who was interested in such things and got it from Sean Omarachu, if it wasn't already the bishop's lent to him, and from Ballinterry House ended up over a period of 20 or 30 years in the hands of the neighbours of Lummisney. Now, all of that is guesswork. We know far too little about O'Brien's books to construct any view of what happened to them, and I've not explained whether other manuscripts involving Omarachu might show further connection with 23N10. But the manuscript was in County Cork no later than 1739. Now, there are other names in the book, 1715, 1706, 1703, 1702, but so far no one has been able to tease out of them information that helps us to locate the book. So we can only pick up on its history from 1739 in effect, and follow it from then to where it is now, which is what I've done. Thank you.